Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
And streaming on WEEI.com.
I mean, there's always room for improvement, position player-wise and pitching-wise. You know, I think that at the end, pitching is the most important thing in this game. You know, if you pitch consistently on a daily basis, you got a shot to win. You look at the Brewers, you look at the Rays, what they're doing, right, with their lineups and, you know, their record. So, you know, if I have to choose, you know, always add from to the pitching part of it, and offensively we can do our thing.
That was Alex Cora yesterday on WEEI Afternoons. He was still in a good mood prior to the game.
Yeah. What happened?
Red Sox win last night. He was a little bit on edge after the game last night. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment. It's Jones and Keefe live at Patriots training camp, day two here at Gillette Stadium. A couple of notes to pass along quick. Drake May starting off 10 out of 10 in team drills.
Oof. Hot as a pistol.
Although a lot of the throws were short, as we saw, screen swing passes. Five of those, according to Callahan, were short. He also had the fumbled exchange. I said I thought it was with Bradbury. Wrong. It's with the rookie Jared Wilson at center. A couple of completions in there to Steph Diggs. The only other note, and I missed this in real time. It was right after the catch we highlighted from Pop Douglas, and we were watching kind of the aftermath of that down the field. I guess shortly after that, right after that.
Yeah.
We also had Kyle Williams' first drop of training camp. So you giveth and you take. Good day yesterday.
The ups and downs of being a rookie.
The drop sees today.
That's all right.
We'll continue to pass along updates from Patriots training camp here today on Jones and Keefe. We're brought to you by McFarland Energy here at Patriots training camp, as is our next guest, Rob Bradford, WEEI, and the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com. Rob Bradford, McFarland to you.
Oh, McFarland, my friend. There is nothing. I need McFarland more than ever, the vibe, because I am taking that six-hour drive from Philadelphia. I am currently calling you from the Grover Cleveland rest stop, which every time
nice.
I think of rest stops and Popeye's chicken, I think of Grover Cleveland. So, yeah, what a time to be alive. And by the way, you guys are doing such an outstanding job. Thank you getting me through this trip.
Yeah.
And I never think of, like, I'm bobbing and weaving your way through observing something that's going on in front of you while doing a show. Like, I remember doing the Red Sox alumni game, and we were doing it from the press box. So we're trying to do the show, and then, oh, wait a second. Julio Lugo just went deep off Pedro Martinez. Oh, yeah. I feel your pain. Yeah.
Those are good updates, Rob. Jones mentioned how Alex Cora in the postgame wasn't in the best mood for a guy that had just won a game. Did you read anything into that?
That's a tough one. You know, and I definitely noticed that after the game. And a lot of times, you know, Cora sort of will zig when everyone thinks he's going to zag when it comes to sort of games like this. But I think some of the questions were, you know, you have like, oh, well, you have like, hey, you know, is this the turning point of the season? Which is, you know, Cora's not going to take that bait. I mean, Cora's not going to say that. And also, I think that another thing that Cora isn't a big fan of is that hey, you know, how you hung with the big boys sort of conversation, because I think that he perceives this team as being already with the big boys. I mean, those are just a couple guesses. But, you know, the vibe in the manager's office after the game was completely different when we walked out into the clubhouse, and then you had everybody saying this was a definitive game. This was a game that will, you know, could be the launching point for bigger things. And this was felt like a playoff game and everything else like that. But you didn't get that from Cora, no.
Okay, interesting. I'm watching the field here, Rob. As you mentioned, we're kind of juggling stuff, watching training camp. Kyle Williams, not only a drop on the field, Keefe, just dropped a punt as well.
Yeah, all right. Well,
so those hands look a little iffy.
Maybe don't have them back there for punts.
On day two, we'll continue to monitor. With the Red Sox last night, I was a little discouraged listening to Sam Kennedy today. I was discouraged by the Jeff Passan report the other day. Just the general tone of what the Red Sox may do at the deadline, Rob. Did they do enough to really invest by taking one out of three, avoiding a sweep against the Cubs and Phillies? Have they done enough to truly invest in this team at the deadline, or should we start tempering expectations?
No, I think this has nothing to do with what their plan was. Like, I honestly, they could have lost last night, and I think it would have stayed the same. And you know, I think that a lot of people, a lot of reporters are doing everything they can, but there's been a lot of generalities when it comes to, especially when with the Red Sox. I'll stay with this, with my tone, which is I think they're more motivated than ever to do something at a deadline, more so certainly than in the last few years, because let's go back to Thou Who Shall Not Be Named, the Devers deal. I mean, when you push your chips to the middle of the table, you push your chips to the middle of the table, like Kennedy said back in January, he said going back to January and February and March, the motivation of this organization to be good in 2025, I think this has led them to be more motivated to do something at the deadline, whether they won or not last night. And I think Cora brought up a good point before the game, which was, yeah, listen, like, you haven't won as many games, but the standings are basically the same. So if the standings are the same, you are right now, as we sit here, a playoff team, then of course you're going to be a buyer. And even if you weren't, even if you were two or three games out, because of what has happened leading up to this, I do still think they are going to be aggressive. And now it's going to get uncomfortable, but they are going to be aggressive.
How would you prioritize starting pitcher, relief pitcher, bat?
Oh, starting pitcher, yeah. I mean, I think the same thing that they think. But like as we said before, let's say last week, good luck with that. You know, this is, you know, I the Joe Ryan thing a week ago, everyone was talking about Joe Ryan, and, you know, Joe Ryan was psyched for the trade deadline. Well, I'd be shocked if Joe Ryan got dealt. And that leads you to a bunch of the Reynolds. And I heard you guys talking about Charlie Morton. And, you know, I think Charlie Morton is sort of like a name that is just, I don't think, put it this way, if they got Charlie Morton, I would have a hard time believing that would be the only pitcher that they've got. So the name that has come up recently that's interesting to me is Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease, you remember, 2 years ago was the be-all, end-all at the trade deadline. His ERA hasn't been great this year. But if you look at it, it's really been, you know, a four-star stretch that hasn't been good. The last couple have been pretty good. And, you know, and I like Dylan Cease. Like, if you said to me you got Dylan Cease on a rental, that's an upgrade. That's a guy we all said, you got to get a guy who can pitch in the playoffs. I would have no problem throwing Dylan Cease out in a playoff game. But there's a bunch of guys. There's a long list of these guys. And so I think that starting pitching number one, and then the relief pitching, you know, to help with what's going on in the back of the bullpen is number two.
On Dylan Cease, and Heyman reported that the Yankees, Mets, Cubs, and Red Sox are among the teams believed to be checking in on Dylan Cease. Like, what's he going to cost you? Is that going to cost you Duran?
I don't know if it would cost you Duran, but, you know, that would be, to be honest with you, from the Red Sox perspective, for a rental,
the Padres love Duran. That's the only reason I ask. We know the Padres love
Duran. Yeah. I mean, we all know this, right? And then I think maybe that's what they're asking for. But again, you're trading for a rental who has a, you know, I can say all these nice things about Dylan Cease and that he writes a mean poem, but it's, you know, this is, but still he, you know, like he has a 4.5 ERA. And so is that what you want? If you want to upturn the clubhouse for Jaron Duran for that, or can you get another avenue of another rental that's going to cost a little bit less? I mean, I don't know, like, if San Diego's saying, hey, you know what, we're going to get Jaron Duran, for Dylan Cease. All I'm saying is that, you know, for the Red Sox, Dylan Cease makes sense. I don't know if it makes sense for Jaron Duran straight up.
You know, you talk about getting uncomfortable at the trade deadline, and, you know, right now you'd have to, I guess, overpay, right, for somebody like Joe Ryan. But should this team be looking at it a little bit differently, considering so many of their players at the major league level are young and under team control for a long time? This isn't a team that has a bunch of old guys, and then if you trade your minor leaguers, then you're going to be in this weird time for, you know, a few seasons until you build it back up. To me, it seems like a no-brainer to even overpay. Now, I wouldn't say gut the farm system, but damn near close gut the farm system, because most of your starting players are in their 20s.
It's a good point, and I would have no problem trading any minor leaguer in their system right now. None. And we couldn't say that before, right? We couldn't say that about Roman Anthony or you know, Marcelo Meyer, or, you know, back when Christian Campbell was a different player back then. We couldn't say that. But I would have no problem trading in Justin Nixon, Garcia, or even like a guy, Peyton Tolley, you know, who's a pitcher who they got in last year's draft. I would have no problem with that. And I think that, to your point, is that at some point you do deal these guys to win now. And we can't – let's not forget what this season is. I mean, let's not forget that this – we go back to the comment of Craig Breslow at the Devers deal. Like, we think that we can win more games this year than we could if we kept it status quo. And it had worked out for the large part throughout the most majority of July. But you have to keep that sort of going. You have to understand that this is 2025. This is the opportunity that you have. And, yeah, you have a lot of young players. And, right, I mean, so don't worry about it. So trade some of these guys, because you know what? At the end of the day, go down the list of minor leaguers who were traded the last two deadlines. There's not a whole lot to come back to hurt you. It's worth it if you want to make a run at things.
Well, that's certainly how we feel. We endorse that on Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Rob Bradford joining us from Baseball Isn't Boring and WEEI.com. You can check out his podcast on the Odyssey app. What's the latest, I guess I would ask? Are there fears about Marcelo Meyer leaving that game early last night? How concerned should we be about that?
I wouldn't not be. I wouldn't not have any concern, because this is the same wrist that he injured in 2022, and I know he was downplaying that. He said, "I don't even remember what wrist it was. It was so long ago." But you know, it was the same wrist. He was in a. I don't even know what you call it, a splint. It wasn't like a, it was just like a splint, which I don't know really how much to read into that. The fact that the plan is to get MRI tells you that it is something. So, I think this, guys, is that, you know, when you have Marcelo Meyer go down, and I know that he hasn't played a lot against lefties and everything else, but he has proven himself to be a part of the solution here. Like, defensively at second base and filling in at third base while Bregman comes back, he is part of the solution. And if you don't have him, then I think what you have to do is move Rafaela back in the infield a whole lot more. I think it weakens the team. So, I wouldn't be surprised for him to go on the injured list, but they I think it would be a big, big hit if they lose him for any extended period of time.
Okay, he is Rob Bradford. You can check out all the latest on Twitter at Bradfo. You can listen to him again on the Odyssey app. Baseball Isn't Boring, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can also check that out on the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps as well. Bradfo, excellent stuff as always. We'll talk to you, I guess, on deadline day next week, huh? A week from today.
Ooh, yeah. How about that?
Good timing.
Be spicy. Yeah.
You can break news right here on Jones and Keefe next week.
Oh, listen, I have a bunch of news which I want to break right now. I'm going to make it save it for next show.
Good idea. Yeah. Put a pin in that.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next week. Bradfo, thank you. As always, excellent stuff.
See you guys.
All right. Rob Bradford joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Speaking of breaking news, Keith, we have significant news.
We do.
And it's sad. Hulk Hogan. It was Ozzy Osbourne earlier this week. Hulk Hogan has died at the age of 71, according to a number of reports out there, TMZ included. I was reading from their timeline.
Yeah.
They say they're told there was a slew of police cars and EMTs parked outside his home, and he was carried out on a stretcher into an ambulance. I guess, and I missed this at the time, but TMZ had a story last month where he was not doing well health-wise.
Yeah, he was doing pretty bad, I guess, was the last update. And so today you get news that Hulk Hogan, perhaps the most famous wrestler in the history of wrestling, has died at the age of 71. Yeah, we saw him even on TV not that long ago. Remember, we were actually talking about it.
His beer, right?
You were like, All-American beer, brother. Yeah. He had the whole thing where he came out, and he was doing some different podcasts and things, but WWE would still bring him out occasionally. And I think it was when they made their first Monday Night Raw on Netflix. So that might have been at the beginning of this year, Bill. Was that like January maybe that we saw Hogan?
Right. Yeah, it sounds about right.
And unreal. So yeah, you had Malcolm Jamal Warner earlier.
Oh, jeez, I forgot about Theo
Huxtable.
Ozzy Osbourne.
And Hulk Hogan.
And now Hulk Hogan.
Good
I mean, they say
Lord.
They say these things come in threes, but ay-yi-yi.
Yeah.
That is, it's a rough week around these parts.
It's crazy. And whether you were a fan of his or not, he is the guy that really broke through.
You've seen him live?
Hogan?
Yeah. Have you seen him live, Bill?
Good question.
You must have, right?
I have.
I was going to say,
I'll tell you, this is insane, right, to even think this is possible. I'm going to throw a brag in here.
Okay. Yeah, do it.
So I was at the Celtics game when they came back.
Sick
from
brag, bro.
We're bragging back about deaths now.
Yeah, no, but they came back from 26 against the Nets, and the place was electric. Hulk Hogan came out to fight Randy Orton at SummerSlam.
Oh, never heard it like that.
Literally,
louder.
Feel the building shake.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't get over it because again, seeing like the Celtics do what they did in the playoffs.
I hear you.
Was
the wrestling crowd goes nuts there.
But when this guy came out to fight Randy Orton, the building was literally shaking. It was insane.
Well, it's another guy. I watch a lot of Hogan Knows Best. Like that's another guy that I probably know more from reality TV. But right across
all that money from Gawker.
Oh yeah. Well, that a crossover superstar, about parlaying his fame from the wrestling world into Rocky movies and the big screen and reality TV and all this other stuff. And so, rough week, terrible news
around
these parts.
He's the reason we watch wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh, he
whether
was,
you're a fan
he
of him or not, but he's why you got into it.
Oh, he was the face of it. And I've seen like 1,000 documentaries on like the WCW, WWF, Monday Night Wars and stuff. And he was at the center of that because he went from WWF to WCW, really put them on the map. His heel turn is the greatest heel turn of all time because he was the take your vitamins, drink your milk guy for the longest time. Then he became bad and he was Hollywood Hogan and it was awesome. And the NWO was the coolest thing in the late 90s. But yeah, he was the guy. What's crazy about him is he couldn't really wrestle, but he didn't have to. Like
yeah,
he was not.
He was more just you liked him because of the personality and the presence.
His personality, his look, the whole thing about him was nuts. And so yeah, it was either him or it was who he was wrestling against. But he was at the center of wrestling for, I don't know, a couple decades probably. And for the non-wrestling fans, they all knew who he was.
Yeah, like Hulk Hogan. Right, that's not like I was a big wrestling fan, but that's a name
throughout the 80s.
That rings out, yeah.
He even predates us a little bit. Like the height of his popularity was probably like, what do you think, Bill? Like mid 80s? Probably like WrestleMania 3. Like
when he was 85, 86 maybe? Maybe
WrestleMania 3 was probably
mid to late
80s.
85,
86, 87. So yeah, but he's like fighting Andre the Giant. And then there's been a lot of guys that they try to, like, pass the torch to, but they never really could do it. Like, Ultimate Warrior or, like...
Plus, Hogan never wanted to.
He wouldn't let him.
He was very stubborn about
quite
how
a bit.
Things were done.
And there's another whole story there where he had, like, creative control in WCW, and then that is just a mess. So it's like, you're going to lose tonight. No, I'm not. It's like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, got it back to the drawing board.
Guess we'll rewrite that.
But it's, like, again, like, the pioneer of heavy metal, the pioneer of wrestling.
Yeah.
Gone.
Seriously.
Like, it's nuts.
I know. It's crazy.
So, again, the news today, and this is in the last, not even
in
10 minutes.
Yeah, this is fresh.
Hulk Hogan, now dead at the age of 71. Patriots wrapping things up here at training camp day 2 at Gillette. Looks like they're going to wrap up with some conditioning, so we'll give you some thoughts. Not only on the news that just went down, we can react to Bradfo as well, but what's going on in front of us here at training camp on Jones and Keefe, WEEI.
No matter where you work from these days,
take Jones and Keefe with you on the Odyssey app.
Favorite WEEI.
We were just talking about this in the last break, Keith, but it is it's like childhood's lost out there for a lot of people.
It's really crazy.
With the news earlier this hour, just the last 15 minutes or so, Hulk Hogan at age 71 has now passed away. That's on the heels of Ozzy earlier this week, and I'd forgotten already. Yeah. Shame on me. Malcolm Jamal Warner as well.
Yeah, think about the time as a kid that I spent watching The Cosby Show or wrestling, and then probably as like a teenager listening to like Black Sabbath and Ozzy, and like all that in a week is gone. Pretty wild. Yeah, I mean, Hulk Hogan was wrestling for the longest time.
Right. Like if you asked me, I'm not a wrestling guy.
Yeah,
if you
asked
me to name a wrestler, that's the first one I'd come up with.
100%.
Like, not even close.
Any Mount Rushmore or Top 5 Friday wrestlers would have Hogan in there. And then you could argue like, well, was he good like actual wrestler?
Was he on your top 5? I mean, not to urinate on anyone's grave, but was he a top 5 American on your list? Did he make the cut? Just off?
Oh, is he on yours?
First omission?
He
wasn't on mine.
No, I ended up going with Kurt Angle because he was also in the Olympics, a true real American and kind of, but Hogan would be considered
a posthumous recognition.
Yeah, sixth.
Yeah, he was right off the list, yeah.
Top honorable mention would be Hulk Hogan. But no, I mean, his career and impact on wrestling kind of like spanned decades. And then he even had like that run late in his career where he had WrestleMania match against The Rock. For God's sake, sort of like bridge that gap. I would say those are probably the two most famous wrestlers of all time because they also crossed over into movies.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true.
You know, Hulk Hogan and Rocky III, for God's sake.
I wonder who I would name Hogan. I would definitely name first. Maybe The Rock second. But you're right. There's not for me a ton of those guys that I just like name quickly.
Cena for the fans now, like a younger generation, and now that he's also in a lot of movies, I think like those are probably the most mainstream guys. You know, and Stone Cold Steve Austin burned really hot. I think people would mention him. But no, I mean, Hulk Hogan was in a sort of a different class than everybody else.
So that's, again, sad news in a sad week around these parts. Hulk Hogan at age 71, again, the news from TMZ, among others, has passed away. We're here at Patriots training camp, day two, Jones and Keefe at Gillette Stadium. You heard the crowd reacting there. They're wrapping up. They're kind of breaking down right now after doing some cool down team stretching sort of thing. Team conditioning at the end of practice, I should say. Mike Reese put a bow on the practice, and I agree with this characterization. You tell me if you agree. Reese said initial thought after second practice, so this was a get the ball out quick, take the profit day for quarterback Drake May. I think it's a nice way of saying May was under a lot of pressure again today.
Yeah.
Probably not too exciting for those in attendance, but part of May's game that could be critical to lowering the INT count. He also notes, shout out Dice, third-string quarterback Ben Woolridge showing up at practice today.
Opportunity to be the backup.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, Dobbs looked better today. He looked terrible yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
I wouldn't say he like stood out in any way today. But sticking with the May piece to that, Keefe, I would agree with that. There was a lot of he doesn't have any time, so he's going to get that ball out quick. You saw it on his first throw to Booty. You saw it on a couple of throws to Steph Diggs.
Yeah.
You saw it on dump-offs to the running backs. There was one to Henderson that May dumped off. So there was not – a lot of time for him to throw. I don't know if that was by design or not, but it didn't look like it to me.
No, I don't love that. You know, and I think Steph Diggs can be a guy that maybe you can work some of the short passes with. I think, you know, the running backs are all going to have to be able to catch a lot of passes this year. But, you know, somebody like Kyle Williams, like if you're looking to try to get him downfield more, like how many opportunities will there be? We knew the offensive line wasn't a strength going in 2 days through camp, and you know, neither of these practices have been full pads. Today they're just in helmets, so you can, you know, if you want to grade it a little bit or take it with a grain of salt, then I guess fine. But we knew that was going to be a little bit of an issue. How's the offensive line going to look? The Patriots defensive line, I would say, is solid, but it's not like some of the ones you're going to be facing, right?
You're not
going up against all pros.
There's no Max Crosby. There's no TJ Watt.
No. So it's not that. So they need to be a little bit better than that, but you know, it's funny because Drake May last year, even in his rookie year, he did throw a lot of short passes. He had a really high completion percentage,
yep,
which is always misleading if guys are throwing the ball at or around the line of scrimmage. You would like to see this year the ability to get it more downfield, and you hope that you have receivers that can do it, but sort of within that conversation is, do you have an offensive line that even allows you to do it?
Well, it's fair. So the numbers rolling in, we'll be sure to pass those along for complete takeaways from practice, but May was 14 out of 15. He did have a batted ball at the end of practice. He also had a fumbled exchange with Jared Wilson, but still no picks through two games. I would say today, again, probably even less reading into those numbers than yesterday. We'll continue to we'll pass along everything from day two today at Patriots training camp. Jones and Keefe live here today again.